Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hola, socios. Hola, equipo. My name is Neil.
I'm Liam.
This is John Nurnberger from Kansas City, Missouri, USA.
Morey Field near Brisbane in Queensland.
Edinburgh.
Barcelona.
And I'm a socio.
I'm a socio.
I'm a socio of the Big Interview.
My name is Neil. I'm originally from Scotland, but now living in Barcelona. Hey, why did I become a socio? Well, you could reference Mr. Hunter's knowledge and access to some great football characters, but I'm going to go for his exceptional use of swear words. He really seems to strike the right chord. They're not overused. As a Scotsman, it's something I really value. My favourite interview of the season, I'm going to go for Kevin Kilbane. He came across as a really open, honest, funny and down-to-earth guy. In general, seemed like the sort of person you could happily sit down, have a pint with him and just listen to his stories.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly Big Interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra Big Interview every month. And you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away, all for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby, and we need you.
Welcome to the Ledley King Show. His career was exceptional. People rate him as being one of the great English central defenders. I think he played more than 350 top-level professional matches. This interview is about the ties that bind him to Spurs, his memories of the lane, the big games that he was a big part of, and the players and managers of his era as a Tottenham legend and, frankly, one of the best defenders in Premier League history. For now, luxuriate in the great Ledley King.
I promise not to bang on and on about Barcelona because, you know, people say to me, you always mention Barcelona, but I'm going to now. Because there's a guy who came to Barcelona and you played with, and it had a catalytic effect on Barcelona when the elections changed and Laporta took over and Rijkaard came in, and the first half of the season was just atrocious. They were higgledy-piggledy, they weren't fit enough to press, not everybody knew what was going on, they were thrashed by Malaga, thrashed by Racing Santander, and at Christmas, Rijkaard decided that somebody he knew from Ajax, who was bouncing around, might do a job.
Yeah.
And they signed Edgar Davids. And he arrived unfit, because he'd been out. And within about a game and a half, the sharpness was coming back.
Yeah,
and I watched Ronaldinho go, like, because they'd never played together, and Ronaldinho was in his pomp then.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he went, you know, are you just a soldier? Or you can play. And they went like that.
Yeah.
And then I watched Xavi, who at that stage was playing in the Busquets role in the middle of midfield, supposedly organising and holding, and far from where he needed to be in terms of opening things up. You could see him game by game and training session by training session. That's what you need to be elite and competitive. Mm. And the impact David's had in 6 months at Barcelona was extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it like when he came to your place?
Did he join? He joined off the back of that, didn't he?
He did. Frank Rijkaard was absolutely distraught because he said, stay, new contract. And he went, no, I'm getting better money. And off he went, which is everybody's right. But they fell out a little bit over it.
That was a great signing. And I think because at the time we had a young team, you know, I was still learning to try and be the captain of the team. And to bring in someone of his experience was great. I remember the first day he came in, when we sat in the canteen, and we had a chat, and he said, "What can we win?" You know, that was his first question. What can we win?
It's a good question.
And that was his mentality. You know, he was a winner. He wanted to win things, and I think he brought the best out of everyone in that team. You know, he had a role in kind of taking us from that 8th, 9th, 10th position to all of a sudden knocking on the door for top four. I think we finished 5th twice under Martin Yeo, and Edgar was a big part of that. You know, I think he just lifted everyone and helped to get a little bit more out of everyone. And he was a great player, great worker as well.
You know, if you could be meeting the bones about what you mean about lifting or showing or changing, how effectively on a daily basis, how does a guy like that do that?
Yeah, well, I think that when you're a young player and you see a player that's done it, won everything, and you see the work ethic on the training pitch, everyone follows suit.
Ooh.
So Edgar would, after training was finished, Edgar would be still out there working on things. He would work on things with the young players as well. Mm-hmm. He'd say, come here and do this with me.
For his benefit or for theirs, do you think?
Both. Both, you know, and that's what, you know, that's what it should be. He wasn't a coach. He was a player who's, you know, got great experience and wants to improve his teammates, his young players. And everyone wanted to impress him.
Oh, that's a great phrase. You know, I understand that.
Of course you do. You know, when you get a superstar like Edgar come to your place, you know, you want to show him what you can do.
Tough tackler? Tough to play against.
Yeah, he was. You know, he was known as a pit bull, and that's what he was. You know, he was quick over the ground, but a lot of people left out how technically good he was, and that was something that he worked on all the time. You know, he loved one-on-ones.
Yeah.
After training, he would love to try and pull me aside and come on, let's do one-on-ones, and he would try and run at me and work his skills, and obviously, he used to get quite heated. He used to get quite heated, you know, because Edgar would try and rub it in if he scored.
Yeah.
You know, he would talk while he's going at you, and it was his competitive nature, and it was great.
What about I talked previously about, and again, it must be you that takes this, I'm just laying up my ideas. I think that people in Britain, we do like extremes of like everybody up and drama and... Control, I don't think, is something that we necessarily opt for. It's not part of our nature.
Yeah.
I think we're quite a dramatic, sort of warlike race, and therefore that sometimes shows in our football.
Yeah.
Whereas I would say that in your ideal match, you'd probably be controlling the ball and using it. But somehow or other, partially because of maybe what you're facing or the people around you, there's quite a lot of times where Spurs were caught out. Part of your legend to Spurs fans... Yeah. Is dealing with that, kind of like bailing water and getting back. And you managed to produce a series of extraordinary interceptions, which I'd like to understand better, while getting booked. I mean, you're sort of Mary Poppins style booking count. You're eight?
Seven or eight.
Seven? Yeah. See, I've even exaggerated. It's eight, seven. Yeah. One, to try and explain your attitude to when the ball's gone by somebody and you've got to rescue the team, or maybe you were at a position. I'm not trying to say you're infallible, and how you did it without getting booked. It's an extraordinary achievement.
It's an instinct. As a kid, I didn't really like going to ground. I think I was always quick across the ground, and from an early age, I just developed a theory that once you go to ground, you're out of the game. And I always felt, even if someone went past me, I could get back at them if I stood on my feet. Obviously, there was times where you have to go to ground, but as much as I could, I tried to stay on my feet and make people beat you. You know, make people... You know, even if they beat you, I thought that I could try and get back at you, and you might have to try and beat me again, which is obviously difficult to do twice, but... That was it, really. That was just the way I played the game. I didn't try not to think about it too much, and you know, it's difficult. Sometimes you don't know. You're just doing it. You're just doing it. You're doing what you do. You know, and sometimes it's difficult to try to explain to people, because you know, everyone has different tools, different gifts, and that was something that I was kind of blessed with.
Who were the strikers when they were coming up, when you're playing like that, you're like, yeah, I love this battle, or I know I've got him in my pocket, or Oof, I don't enjoy this one.
Yeah.
If you go across your career.
I never really said I had anyone in my pocket until the game was over. Because you strikers can be quiet for 90 minutes and score a goal. And if they've scored a goal, I wouldn't say I had them in my pocket. Do you know what I mean? They have to not score for me to feel that I had them in my pocket. But I enjoy playing against all the best strikers because I wanted to test myself. I wanted to be what I believed in my own head. You know, you need to play against the best to bring out the best in you, and for people to see how good you are is the best. So I love playing against Thierry. I love playing against Drogba. You know, whoever was the best, that kind of used to excite me.
What did Thierry do that was difficult for you?
Thierry drifted around the pitch. Thierry would go out on the left. So he was out of my zone.
Did you go?
There's times where you can't. Of course, there's a centre-half, and that's what makes... You know, when we talk about the best players, you look at Messi, you look at Ronaldo, and they're not really up against you. Do you know what I mean? They can pick balls up from 30 yards, 40 yards, and they can get running with the ball. They can... Ronaldo a little bit less now, because he's playing up top a little bit more now. Players who can affect the game from 30 yards out, 40 yards out, be in different areas of the pitch and affect the game, they're the ones that they're difficult, because if I had confidence in myself to, you know, playing up against you one-on-one, that's one thing. But once you go on the left or right, I have to put trust in other people.
Are you peripherally kind of watching what's going on as well as doing what's now in front of you, if they've drifted off?
When they're the top players, you know that they can beat someone very easy. And that opens up spaces, that pulls people out of positions, just opens up a whole new world. So, of course, you're aware of you might have to cover and help, but also the top players can find a pass that can you can't switch off, basically, with these players. You know, you're always alert. Once certain players get around 30, 40 metres around, you've got to have all your antennas up, expecting danger.
You've mentioned him. Was Drogba a very physical battle? Is Drogba bigger than you?
Similar size.
So it wasn't a case of being bullied?
No. I mean, it wasn't a case of being bullied. Drogba was strong. But he wasn't just strong. He had very good feet. Great in the air. You know, he could score goals. He scored lots of different types of goals. That's what he could do. You know, if a cross came in, you knew that there was a good chance that he'd get his head on it. But he could score unexpected goals as well. He could score volleys, as we've seen him do. He could turn and bang shots in from 20, 30 yards. He was one of the best. You know, he wasn't just a big man. He could also run. He could also hold a ball up when he needed to, bring other people into play. But he was also a goal for it. And, you know, often with big men, you can often get, they're great at holding up the ball or they're great in the air, but they're not so much of a goal for it. Drogba had a bit of everything, where he maintained, you know, everything, being strong, being able to hold the ball up, being able to turn and get shots off. And Adebayor was a bit the same when he's at his best, when he's at his prime. Mm-hmm. Can do a bit of everything. They're
very skilled, wasn't he?
Yeah, they're difficult guys, yeah.
How many of them tried, across your career, how many tried to sort of trick you with movement, or how many were in your ear trying to put you off? Yeah. Or
none in my ear.
You're
joking. Really happen, no. Didn't really happen.
Wow.
Thierry was nice. You know, Thierry would talk about, you know, he was really friendly with me, which I didn't like, because as a defender, you know, you're trying to concentrate and you don't
Leave
really want
me
someone
alone.
Having at the same time, you're thinking it's Thierry, you've got to respect him.
that's a good upbringing, that is.
You know, don't put me off my game. I'm fully focused here.
I've never heard that, honestly.
Yeah, so I always felt strikers, they can play quite relaxed. You know, I think defensively, you have to be switched on the whole time. And that's the way I like to.
And you weren't the type to frighten or bully somebody or try and scare them?
No, because for me, talk's cheap anyway. You know what I mean? I think, you know, you try to do it by your actions. I think there was one person going back. I think Paul Dickoff was someone who gave me a little bit of verbals once.
Paul, you know we follow each other on Twitter. Paul was born in Scotland, so...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And we're, you know, like that, we're like that.
He's the nicest guy in the world.
He is, but
pitch,
he, I think he would admit he was a terrier.
Yeah, yeah, and... But I didn't... My reaction was, okay, in my head, all right, now you're not going to get a kick, rather than giving him the mouth back. Because at the same time, I didn't want to sell myself to talking too much, and then he gets a hat-trick. You know what I mean? That's no good. So let's keep focused. Let's do my job on him now. And that's the way I was.
This season, we have a new sponsor, Bet365, the world's biggest online betting company. Have you listened to our Q&A previewing the season in Spain? It's a two-parter, each of which are available right now. You lovely Big Interview listeners sent in your questions, and so did the guys at Bet365.
The guys have asked, how difficult will it be for Thibaut Courtois to get in the Real Madrid side ahead of Keylor Navas?
It's worth saying in answer to this question that Courtois had been hinting on social media that he was ready to start. But the media picked up on it, and the two Madrid papers had Courtois on the front page saying, you know, Courtois starts, Courtois is ready. But the adoration that the players have for Keylor, the fact that one of the reasons that Zidane left was that he saw interference by the president on who was going to be the first choice goalkeeper. And Zidane didn't like it. He knew how the team felt about Keylor and the value of Keylor. The solution will be that the competitions are split. Trebles come where great keepers duke it out.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's talk about a couple of happy times, I hope. In your career, you did things that weren't very regular for Spurs. 2002, January, Tottenham Hotspur 5, Chelsea 1. Mm-hmm. An absolute bossker. Everson, Sherwood, Sheringham, Simon Davis, Rebrov. Do you remember the occasion? Do you remember what was at risk? Hoddle the manager, Ronnie Ayer the manager?
Yeah, of course.
What? Instantly I say that, what comes to you?
It was one of them magical days at the Lane, you know, under the floodlights, where everything went right. You know, we didn't put a foot wrong all game. There was another one further down in my career against Arsenal. But that was my first magical experience at the Lane. You know, as a 21-year-old, with 2-1 down in the first leg, playing against a good team, good Chelsea team.
And it was.
And... you know, it was one of the magical days, magical nights, and obviously, it was we reached the final with that performance. And at the time, you think that these finals are going to come around all the time, which obviously I learned they don't.
You did quite a few of them.
Three. I did play three finals, a few semi-finals, but you know, that was my first experience as a 21-year-old, and as I say, that. It was one of my first real magical.
What was selling? What was the crowd like? What was the atmosphere like? Or are you going to tell me you're unaware of that because you're so focused?
There's certain games where it's just they're just different, you know. And I think that obviously the fans were up for the game. It's a massive game, semi final, but it was also the way we started the game. And when you start a game and you get on top and you score early in the game,
2 minutes in, Everton,
then you know you're just kind of you're just going downhill, so to speak. The crowd lifted us. We just kept going, and you kind of playing without thinking. You're just playing on emotions and passion, and it was too much for them. They couldn't handle us.
Further down the line, I was going to raise it too. Jermaine Genus, Nicholas Bentner, Robbie Keane, Aaron Lennon, Adeboyer got one back, sorry. Steve Malbrank.
Bentner? You said Bentner?
Bentner got the second for 2-0.
Well, I know
that can't be right.
Yeah.
Jermaine Genus scored, Keane, Lennon, Steed, Emmanuel Adeboyer for Arsenal. 5-1 it finishes, yeah. January 2008. Juan de Ramos in charge. Mm. One of his glory moments. Again, memories of that.
Similar thing.
Better that because it's Arsenal or Chelsea? Better because it's Arsenal.
I think so. Also, this was the second time I'd reached the final. Obviously, a little bit older now. You start to wonder, are you going to win anything? So, being captain, obviously against the rivals, as you say, when we wasn't doing too great in the league, probably was a little bit, had that little bit more about it. But again, similar in terms of the night. I'm sure we scored an early goal again.
Do you mean after 3 minutes?
3 minutes, yeah. So, that's the key. Get an early goal, get the fans behind you, and we'll beat you 5-1.
You're very diplomatic. This isn't a visual medium, but as he was thinking about it, Ledley's smile just got bigger and bigger and bigger until the laugh erupted. Juan de Ramos, I have to ask, as somebody who kind of watched him and knew what his Seville team was all about, and you won a trophy under him, but it was a mismatch experience. Mm. And I seem to remember Aurelio Gomez saying that the food regime with the sort of vitamin mush balls and whatever, and the stripping out of treats in the training ground, made him feel like he was on starvation rations. And under how bad was the kitchen under Juan de Ramos?
Yeah, it changed quite a bit. I think the first thing he said that everyone was overweight when he came. I think he took 22 players from Seville, 22 players from Tottenham, and said we're 100 kg more than them for the 22 players. But you know, everyone's bodies are built differently. You know, the Premier League's a little bit more physical.
A lot.
So that was the first thing.
Doesn't win your friends.
Yeah. And you know, everyone had to lose weight. There was one player that didn't have to lose weight. Just one.
Was there a Spaniard in the team?
Nope. Who? I don't think there was a Spaniard. But
Hold on. I'm going to cheat here.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you a clue. He scored in the game.
Jermaine?
Yeah. Which one, though?
Defoe?
No.
Genus?
Yeah. Right. Genus was the only one who was fit, so to speak.
You said that with a degree of bitterness there.
Yeah, I had between 7 and 8% body fat.
What?
But I still had to lose weight. Yeah. So I think there's a way of weighing, and you can come out obese if you're a sports person, because you. I forget the words of it now, but if you take certain body mass or certain height and blah blah blah,
it's never really troubled me. I can't help you on that one.
So, but. You know, we stuck by it and we ended up winning something, so I can't complain. But yeah, some players lost a lot of weight. I think Paul Robinson, goalkeeper, I remember him losing a lot of weight. Tom Huddleston. But I think we did become a fitter team for it. You know, the way he wanted to play was counter-attack football. Mm. You know, when we went forward, he wanted to go forward with speed and to have energy. So as players, you know, you just have to follow the manager's rules.
That's a fair answer. Yeah. That isn't always true, because managers that we speak to in the series or I've learned from, they're aware that it's not like I'm the boss and you boys play for me. There is a degree where you have to get a core of the players saying, I might not like it, but I'm into this.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's difficult to argue with. We want you to be fitter. We want you to lose some weight. You know, I think you've got to be open. You've got to be, you know, this was a new manager coming in. We've seen that he had success. We wanted success. You know, did we agree with it? Some didn't, of course. Mm. But let's give it a go. Let's see how we feel.
And it brought you a trophy.
It did, yeah.
What's the moment like when you think back to the cage, think back to, I presume your mum sacrificed things or encouraged you, and you're at the club that you've fallen in love with, and, yeah, and you're like, the whistle's coming, or we're leading, or again, I'm asking about the emotions and when you can disconnect from have to win, concentrate. What happens when you're the leader and you win a big trophy at a stadium like that?
All of a sudden, you start to think, it's not as hard as I thought. You know, once you've got that first taste, and it's something that you want more of. You know, we got to the final the next year, lost on penalties.
Mm-hmm. To United,
yeah. So all of a sudden, you've got over a hurdle that, you know, a lot of the players in my team had never won anything. You know, I remember, obviously, Robbie was there from a young age as well with me, in a similar position. You know, hadn't won anything, and 26, 27 at that time, and you're starting to think, you know, am I ever going to win anything? So I think there was a feeling of relief that we've achieved something. But, you know, throughout the game, it's, you're always wondering, you know, is it not going to be our day again? You know, until that whistle comes. And when it does, then, you know, as I say, you have that belief that you can go into each season and win something, which obviously it's not been the case. But, you know, it did give us a lift. But obviously we've lost, you know, after that, teams get broken up, you lose some players. And that was a difficulty, you know, having to start again with different groups of players, which has always been tough during my time at Tottenham.
I want to close by, because your time's precious, you've given us a lot, I want to close by asking about sentiment. And you're an ambassador for Spurs.
Yeah.
So it's very clear that they're doing the right thing by moving to Wembley, building a new stadium. So let's just accept that progress and bigger stadium and bigger revenue,
yeah,
is a good thing.
Yeah.
But you're losing a precious thing. You know, you're losing the lane.
Yeah.
I want to try and understand what the bricks and mortar of that place, the people that work there, the noises, the sounds, the memories that are now bulldozed meant to you. Are you sentimental? Do you have a seat in the back garden? Have you taken any mementos? Or knock me down and say, that's a load of rubbish, I'm not sentimental. You know, progress is everything.
Yeah, I'm not that sentimental. You know, but what I take with me is my memories. In terms of, you know, the first time I turned up at the stadium as a kid, the ball court, you know, which is no longer there and hasn't been there for years. You know, I'll never forget these things. Being out there, making my debut, first at home, my home debut. You know, how the fans reacted to me and how they still do. You have to move with the times, I believe. Obviously, we've had some great memories and great history at that stadium, but, you know, we're now hoping that we can create some more memories in the new stadium, and you know, things do move on with time. You know, as I said, the new training facility that the team moved to probably 5 years ago.
It's sensational. I mean, around Europe, I tell you,
yeah,
clubs talk about it around Europe.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, if Tottenham want to be a club that is competing on all levels and known as one of the biggest clubs around, and these are the steps that we're going to have to take. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of people that are sad about the stadium going, but I think the great thing is that we're not moving. We're not moving from White Hart Lane. You know, obviously, the new stadium will have a different name. but we have to move with the times, and hopefully, we can create some more special moments in the new stadium.
Apart from earning a good living, enjoying yourself and lifting trophies, is it nice spending your career feeling love? Because not many players get that.
Yeah. Of course, I've got such a great relationship with the fans. But it wasn't something that I thought about. It was never in my thinking. It was just going along with how I felt at the time, which was happy at Tottenham. Obviously I wanted to compete for as much as I could, but you've got to remember I was injured. I had my knee problems from the age of 26 to when I retired, 31. That obviously had an impact on me, but I saw the way the fans reacted to when I was playing. Every time my name was called out, how much I meant to them. And that was important to me. I loved that feeling. And as I say, I was very happy there. I was comfortable in terms of, I've always felt the club was going in the right direction. I feel that if I'd have been fit, then we could have been a better team, a team that could have come maybe close to winning. Well, we would have won more things, more trophies, been close to maybe winning the league. But I was just in a happy place, and for me that was important in my career.
You put us in a happy place. It's not a cliche, it's the truth. This has been everything that we expected it to be. I hope some of the big interviews' admiration for the kind of person that you are and the player that you are has come through. Thank you. Can I make me a little deal with you?
Go on.
Yeah. I think you're going to manage. I think you're going to take some of the things that you learned from Joel and Harry Redknapp that you're going to manage. So a couple of seasons into your managerial career,
yep,
and things are calm and you're under control on it. Let's do this again and talk about management and the process of management.
We've got a deal for sure.
Oh, come on. I am the deal maker, Ledley King.
Appreciate
Thank you very
it.
Much
Thank
indeed.
You. Cheers, thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Absolutely sensational. Thank you for joining us for season 2018-19. We've got huge creative plans for the months ahead, but we do need your help to make them happen. Please go right now to patreon.com/GrahamHunter and become a socio, become a paying member, and get an extra big interview every month plus loads of bonus content. Last season, socios listened to 9 exclusive big interviews, including Rafa van der Vaart, Troy Deeney, Roberto Di Matteo, and loads of me talking about football. The Premier League, the Champions League, Spanish football. I'm sure they enjoyed it and you will too. Support us, join us. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.